Today is Tuesday, March 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. As the number of cases of COVID-19 continues to rise, governments aren't mincing words with their recommendations.
Enough is enough. Go home and stay home.
Plus, how do you protect yourself from disinformation?
Be very skeptical of what you see on social media and only go when you have questions to trusted sources.
And the world says goodbye to an iconic comic artist. Those stories and more are next. The number of infected COVID-19 cases approaches 400,000 globally as countries continue to grapple with the human and economic impact of the pandemic. The International Olympic Committee and Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe have concluded that the 2020 Tokyo Olympics must be postponed and held no later than the summer of 2021, both the IOC and the Tokyo 2020 organizers said on Tuesday. After a call with IOC President Thomas Bach, Abe said that the July 24th through August 9th event would be rescheduled for the summer of 2021 at the latest as proof of victory over the coronavirus. On Tuesday, Italy reported a third consecutive day in which its daily deaths and new infections declined. That nation has suffered by far the deadliest consequences of the novel coronavirus outbreak, with nearly double the number of fatalities of China, where many experts say the pandemic originated. South Korea, which once held the position of being one of the hardest hit nations, showed its own continued progress. Numbers released Tuesday showed 76 new cases. That makes 13 consecutive days of new infections below 100. The World Health Organization said the United States could become the global epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak as Britain went into lockdown. But the Chinese province of Hubei, where the virus was first identified in December, said it would lift travel restrictions on people leaving the region as the epidemic there eases. On Monday, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said people defying advice to isolate themselves to fight the coronavirus outbreak should go home and stay home or face sanctions.
We've all seen the pictures online of people who seem to think they're invincible. Well, you're not. Enough is enough. Go home and stay home. This is what we all need to be doing. And we're going to make sure this happens, whether by educating people more on the risks or by enforcing the rules if that's needed. Nothing that could help is off the table.
Also, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said he will impose a nationwide lockdown for 21 days beginning Thursday to try to contain the coronavirus outbreak. Reuters' Libby Hogan reports.
South Africa will impose a nationwide lockdown for 21 days from midnight on Thursday to try to contain the coronavirus contagion. As the number of confirmed cases jumped to over 400 on Monday, President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation.
The nationwide lockdown is necessary to fundamentally disrupt the chain of transmission across society. I have accordingly directed the South African National Defence Force to be deployed to support the South African Police Service in ensuring that the measures we are announcing are implemented.
South Africans will still be able to leave their homes to buy food, seek medical care, and collect social grants. But all shops and businesses will be closed, except for essentials including pharmacies, banks, supermarkets, and the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Ramaphosa said health workers, emergency personnel, and security services would be among those exempt from the lockdown. On the streets, Cape Town local Wellington Nikila accepted the news.
It would be okay if there will be a total shutdown, just to minimize the spreading of the virus.
South Africa has the most confirmed cases of coronavirus in sub-Saharan Africa, and public health experts are worried that it could overwhelm the health system if infection rates continue to rise. Elsewhere on the continent, Zimbabwe closed all its borders except to returning residents after reporting its first death from the virus. Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, also closed its land borders after also registering its first death.
Libby Hogan reports for Reuters News. Australian states are closing their borders in a bid to slow the spread of the Corona 19 virus. Western Australia, South Australia, and the Northern Territory will grant quarantine-free entry to only essential workers from other parts of the country. Phil Mercer reports there are more than 1,800 confirmed COVID-19 cases in Australia and at least 7 deaths.
Australian states are closing their borders in a bid to slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Western Australia, South Australia and the Northern Territory will grant quarantine-free entry to only essential workers from other parts of the country. There are more than 2,000 confirmed COVID-19 cases in Australia. 8 people have died. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports. And here is the text in 5. Western Australia stretches across 2.5 million square kilometres. It covers a third of the vast Australian continent. Beginning Tuesday, it will try to seal itself off from the rest of the country in a bid to limit the spread of COVID-19. The authorities are effectively closing the border. Anyone who crosses into Western Australia will be forced into quarantine. Essential workers are exempt. The State Premier Mark McGowan says the new measures are tough.
We'll be introducing new border controls for Western Australia. These strict new border controls will apply to all access points, roads, rail, air and sea. Unless exempted, arrivals from interstate will be ordered to self-isolate for 14 days. Exemptions will apply for essential services and essential workers. We're looking at acquiring very soon some hotels for self-isolation zones, so that we can have places to quarantine people who have difficulty self-isolating or who won't self-isolate.
South Australia is introducing similar regulations. The island of Tasmania has already effectively shut itself off from the Australian mainland. The state of Queensland will shut its borders Wednesday. The Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said his country was facing an unprecedented crisis.
For many, young and old, 2020 will be the toughest year of our lives.
In Australia's two biggest cities, Sydney and Melbourne, bars, cafes and cinemas have been ordered to close as the COVID-19 threat intensifies. Banks, supermarkets, pharmacies and other essential services will remain open. Australia's domestic soccer competition, the A-League, has become the last major sporting competition to postpone matches because of the coronavirus pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Reliable information is key to curtailing the spread of the COVID-19 coronavirus. During the pandemic, some bad actors are spreading disinformation online. I spoke with VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden to learn more.
Well, there are lots of different types of disinformation, and you can probably lump them into two big categories and very broad categories. The first being the type of disinformation that people who are trying to run some scams might use, talking about, hey, if you do this, you give us money, well, we have a cure, or we'll provide some sort of protection somehow, or, you know, you have to follow these regulations and so do this and give us information, which they'll then use later to get, you know, identifiable information, maybe access bank accounts. So you have that type of disinformation that's out there. The other type of disinformation that is pretty much being front and center for a lot of U.S. government officials for quite some time is that the state-run disinformation campaigns, and they've accused 3 countries mostly of doing this. One is Russia, and starting in about mid-February, the U.S. was warning that Russian outlets, whether they were state-run media or internet accounts linked to Russian officials, were putting out campaigns saying that the coronavirus was a bioweapon engineered by the U.S., that it was something created by Bill Gates, or that it was something created by the CIA designed to hurt China and China's economy because China is becoming such a rival to the U.S. on the global stage. So there's that. More recently, the State Department and officials from other parts of government have singled out China and have criticized China for using their official Twitter accounts to similarly put out information about the U.S. role in coronavirus, which they say are completely untrue. A lot of them coming back to some of these theories about U.S. involvement in creating coronavirus, whereas the U.S. and most other countries say the first cases actually originated in China. And then more recently, the State Department and some other officials of government have pointed to Iran and some of the information that they've been sharing with their public. They say the Iranian government, the Iranian regime has been lying to the Iranian people about what's been going on with coronavirus, and as a result has put their population at great risk. So those are the things that are going on.
So you mentioned that the State Department has put out this information about these three states putting out alleged disinformation. What about the technology companies? Because they're presenting this information online. I know Twitter has taken some steps as well as Facebook, but can you explain a little bit about what's happening to curtail the spread of misinformation?
Well, it's really, really difficult. As you mentioned, both Twitter and Facebook have announced steps they're taking, trying to make sure that bad information, disinformation is either marked or is simply not spread. They will actually take it down and make sure that it's not shared with all their users. But the difficulty is a lot of this information isn't being shared in open forums. A lot of it is actually coming in forums that you can't see, things like Facebook groups or private networks or private groups with other social media apps like Telegram, where you really, researchers and the government really have a hard time going in there and seeing what's going on. The techniques that the people in the countries that are spreading this disinformation, like Russia, that they're using, very much similar to what they've been doing in full view, which the U.S. saw back in the 2016 election. But it's happening behind the scenes now, behind this veil. And so it's very hard to see it. And that makes it much more difficult to call out. And of course, one thing that they've always been good at doing, whether it's Russia or China, but especially Russia, is finding vulnerable populations that they can exploit with this information that will be more likely to adopt it and to repeat it elsewhere.
So what can consumers of information do to essentially verify what they read is in fact true and not something that's being propagated as false information?
Well, the basic advice that most intelligence officials, State Department officials, other U.S. government officials have been giving all along is, look, caveat emptor, buyer beware. Be very skeptical of what you see on social media and only go when you have questions to trusted sources like the CDC.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent. In the western U.S. state of Arizona, a man in his 60s died from ingesting chloroquine phosphate. It's an additive that's typically used to clean fish tanks. Reports of cases of chloroquine poisoning also come from Vietnam and Nigeria. The poisoning follows a claim by U.S. President Donald Trump last week that the widely available antimalarial drug might help treat COVID-19, but that remains an unproven treatment. VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to Columbia University epidemiologist Dr. Elizabeth Radin about what we know about the effectiveness of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine for fighting COVID-19 and how far we might be from having a proven treatment available to patients around the world.
Both of these drugs have been shown to have some activity against the virus in vitro, which basically means in a test tube. So if we just chemically combine these agents with the virus in a glass tube or a petri dish, we can see some activity there. There was a study in China. That study was fairly small, kind of on the order of 100 people. And the findings were relatively preliminary because of that, that reported chloroquine treatment of COVID-19 related pneumonia. Those patients who were treated in that study were reported to have some clinical benefit, some limiting of their virus in comparison to the group that wasn't treated. And so chloroquine was recommended as a potential antiviral treatment in China. Based on this preliminary evidence, chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine are recommended for the treatment of hospitalized COVID patients in several countries. Now, there's caveats on that, and there's reasons that those are only recommended to be considered with patients who are already quite sick. There's no clinical trial evidence to inform dosing or duration for either prophylaxis or treatment of COVID-19. So really, overall, we're at a preliminary stage in evidence.
What is this process to approve a drug as a treatment? And then where along that line does chloroquine fall?
So there are three key steps. The first is testing the safety of the drug on a small scale, approximately tens of patients. The second is seeing if the drug that we now think we have evidence is at least safe is also effective at achieving the outcome we want. And that's done with approximately hundreds of patients. And the third step is testing both the safety and efficacy with a much larger sample that allows us to consider certain subpopulations, so younger people or older people or people with a certain pre-existing condition that allows us to consider potentially different dosages or even combinations with other drugs. And those studies are on the order of thousands of patients. We have not gotten all the way through that three-step process with chloroquine for the treatment of COVID-19. The trials are very much ongoing. We don't have the results yet.
Why is it important to wait for the end of those trials?
We need to know that we have the best possible evidence that a drug is safe, and we need to know rigorously that this drug is effective, that it's not something that just happened randomly in one patient, that we're not making a false assumption, particularly because we don't want patients to be wasting precious time that they have in their treatment taking a drug that might not be effective when they could be taking something else that could help them more.
There have been people self-medicating with chloroquine and now have ended up with chloroquine poisoning.
Self-medication is always a risky thing. There are safety considerations and safety profiles for all drugs. There are underlying conditions that could make the drug dangerous. There are possible interactions with other drugs you might be taking. With the case of chloroquine, there's the added factor that people who are trying to take chloroquine for prevention or treatment of COVID-19, that's not a condition that the drug is currently recommended for at all.
Even if this were to move through the clinical trials successfully, there is the issue of making sure there's enough of it and getting it to all the people who need it or might need it.
It takes time to plan, to implement, and to analyze the types of studies that I've described. After that evidence is gathered, it still has to be reviewed by regulatory authorities. The drug has to be labeled or given specific recommendations for dosages, side effects, and then it has to be produced and distributed. All of these steps are being expedited. All of this is being done at lightning fast speed for COVID-19. But nonetheless, I think that that estimate for really having a appropriately proven, appropriately approved and recommended treatment for COVID is still months on the horizon.
Dr. Elizabeth Radin is an epidemiologist at Columbia University. She spoke to VOA's Jason Patinkin. And coming up later,
Pompeo strongly rebuked Ghani and Abdullah by name, saying their failure has harmed U.S.-Afghan relations.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Even as top health officials warn that America's coronavirus outbreak will get worse, U.S. President Donald Trump says he wants to reopen the nation's businesses soon. The AP's Sagar Magani takes things from here.
There's growing tension between one camp arguing the nation risks falling into a deep economic depression unless it reopens, and medical experts who warn the human cost of doing that will be catastrophic, with the outbreak not even at its peak yet. The president appears to be growing impatient with the shutdown.
We have to open our country, because that causes problems that, in my opinion, could be far bigger problems.
With the economic impact growing and markets falling, he wants the country open again in weeks, not months, saying without evidence, the consequences of keeping it shuttered could be worse than those of the pandemic itself.
Probably more death from that than anything that we're talking about with respect to the virus.
Suggesting it could cost more lives than the virus.
There will be a tremendous death from that. Death. You know, you're talking about death.
Without citing evidence, the nation's about halfway through the government's suggested 15-day run of closures, which the president acknowledges has saved many lives.
many, many lives.
Health experts say unless the U.S. continues sharply limiting social interactions, virus cases will overwhelm the nation's healthcare system. Asked if his top health officials have signed off on his idea, the president said they have not.
I think they're okay with it, and I'm okay with it.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
There was a surge in markets Tuesday thanks to historic measures taken by central banks to support economies reeling from the coronavirus pandemic. South Korea's benchmark KOSPI index gained more than 8% at the end of the day, while Japan's Nikkei rose 7%. Indices in Australia and Hong Kong both finished 4% higher, while the Shanghai ended up more than 2%. The markets were boosted by the U.S. Federal Reserve's announcement that it was launching a massive buying program in various investments to keep the nation's economy afloat, including corporate and municipal bonds. South Korea and Japan have announced similar economic rescue measures. The good news extended into Europe, with the DAX index in Frankfurt gaining 5% in mid-morning trading and both London's FTSE and CAC 40 in Paris up nearly 4%. U.S. markets rallied more than 5% in early trading. Publishers of three U.S. newspapers urged China on Tuesday to reverse a decision to force out about a dozen American journalists, saying in an open letter that the expulsions come at a time of shared crises for the world. China announced on March 18th it was revoking the press accreditations of all American journalists in the China bureaus of three newspapers that were due to expire at the end of 2020, effectively expelling them. Representatives of the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and the New York Times said the decision was uniquely damaging and reckless as the world is fighting a global coronavirus pandemic. The expulsions were the latest escalation in a dispute with the United States over media freedom and access. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made a previously unannounced visit to Kabul on Monday to meet with Afghanistan's rival leaders as he sought to end the political crisis and salvage the peace process with the Afghan Taliban. But after the visit, Pompeo blasted those leaders, saying they were unable to agree on an inclusive government and announcing a $1 billion cut in U.S. assistance to Afghanistan for this year. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has the story.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled to violence-stricken Afghanistan during the middle of the global coronavirus pandemic to meet in person with both Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and his rival Abdullah Abdullah. Both Ghani and Abdullah declared themselves president of the country after a contentious election. And the dispute threatens to derail a deal signed between the U.S. and the Taliban last month. In a written statement hours after the visit, Pompeo strongly rebuked Ghani and Abdullah by name, saying their failure has harmed U.S.-Afghan relations and sadly dishonors those Afghan, American, and coalition partners who have sacrificed their lives and treasure in the struggle to build a new future for this country. Experts say Pompeo's visit under the circumstances showed just how high the stakes were.
I think that the idea here was to signal to Kabul and to Afghanistan on the whole just how committed the U.S. is to helping Afghanistan get through a very difficult political crisis that has stood in the way of launching peace talks.
Last month's historic peace deal in Doha has been followed by weeks of disputes between the Taliban and the Afghan government. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Elber Uderzo, who drew the Asterix and Obelix comics that delighted legions of children and adults over the past six decades, has died at the age of 92. His son-in-law told the French news agency that he died in his sleep in his home after a heart attack that was not linked to the coronavirus. He had also been extremely tired for the past several weeks. And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, I would like to thank you for joining us. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.